Reclaiming Christian America. It's years 1915 to 1925. World War I was a wake-up call for evangelicals, and in particular, your conservative evangelicals. There was a sudden realization for conservatives that our Christian America isn't really so Christian anymore, or it might not be as Christian as we think it is. Evolution and higher criticism were being taught in many of our conservative seminaries, and those conservative seminaries were going gradually more and more theologically liberal. Well, where did these ideas come from? They had been here for a half a century and growing, but no one seemed to, at least at the mainstream level, no one really seemed to care or understand. These ideas were coming from Germany, and who was the aggressor in World War I? Germany. So throughout America, there was an anti-German fury that just erupted, and this fury was fanned into flame from the pulpits even. Conservative evangelicals were absolutely alarmed, thinking through, suddenly there was this idea that evolution was taught in Germany. Germany was the aggressor in World War I. What's happened to Germany, the Barbary that Germany had descended into? Evolution's totally responsible for this, and or largely responsible, and we can't have evolution being taught in America. Militant evangelicals, the ones who are most militant about this were, and who are the most ready to battle for the soul of America, were the fundamentalists. Now, at the academic level, fundamentalists were more against, it was more about theological liberalism, and they were trying to preserve the fundamentals of the faith. But at the mainstream level, your most militant evangelicals, the fundamentalists, at the mainstream level, the fight was pretty much to save America. It was very much an American-centric fight. In the PowerPoints, you can see on Reclaiming Christian America a few quotes that are in there. A pastor by the name of T.L. Spencer, I believe, not a very big name, but just a normal pastor. I found reading some things that he had preached about. And one quote that stood out, he said, "The new theology, it has made in the made in Germany mark upon it. The new theology has led Germany into barbarism, and it will lead any nation into the same demoralization." The new theology, referring to higher criticism, theological liberalism, evolution. Billy Sunday preached Christianity and patriotism are synonymous terms, and hell and traitors are synonymous. And Billy Sunday, his major fight was with alcohol. And he was very much in excited about, he was very much a proponent of fighting in the Great War. William Jennings Bryant, he said, "All ills from which America suffers, it can be traced back to the teaching of evolution." And so from William Jennings Bryant, that was his big fight. And so those two men were really Sunday and Bryant were the two big leaders of the fundamentalist movement in the early 20th century. Mainstream fundamentalism during this time, World War I sparked fears of changes brought on by, a lot of it brought by immigrants, but there was an idolatrous love of country and a complete vacuum of theology. So as I've said many times in these two lectures that there was an absence of making disciples in the churches. So you had this absence of theology, and it was filled with an idolatrous love of country, I think is a lot of what was going on. And so when it seemed that our country was being threatened, suddenly there, amongst conservative evangelicals, there was fear, there was anger, and it sparked action. There was a fear of immigrants, especially because, whoa, there's European immigrants coming over, German immigrants coming into our country. Well, those who were most sensationalist were Billy Sunday and William Jennings Bryan. They were shameful in this sense. Sunday preached racial purity. He preached for nationalism, preached about prohibition. In fact, the Ku Klux Klan, this is one of the saddest parts of fundamentalist history, but Klan membership reached 4 million in the mid-1920s, primarily Christian fundamentalists. One of the saddest, saddest chapters of this history. Bryan preached against evolution, and though, to be quite honest, he had never read a book on evolution by an evolutionist. He preached what he thought the evolutionists were teaching, and what he had heard they were teaching Neither Sunday nor William Jennings Bryan were theologians. They were both sensationalists. They were both very much entertaining preachers, highly inflammatory, powerful speakers, but just a complete absence of any academic training whatsoever. One of the most shameful chapters in fundamentalist history is 1915 to 1925. Well, fear and anger melded conservative evangelicals into a political force for the very first time in their history. A coalition kind of started to form with liberals, and even Catholics were a part of it, and non-Christians of all kinds to pass prohibition. The ends justify the means. And evangelical fury was largely focused on evolution, though it was focused on, you know, it was anti-communism and anti-alcohol and anti-evolution and a few other things. Evolution was the major, major fight for fundamentalists. The Scopes trial of 1925 is where it culminated. William Jennings Bryan went on to defend biblical creation. And I think this is a case where fundamentalists won the battle that day, but utterly lost the war. It was a spectacular failure. So spectacular that within 24 hours of the trial ending, the reversal that was felt from 1925 to 1940 began pretty much overnight, because fundamentalists were so humiliated by William Jennings Bryan's poor defense of biblical creation and his absolute ignorance of evolution. Clarence Darrow really put Bryan in his place. Bryan sensationalized the trial, taunted evolutionists going into it, very, very arrogant, very self-confident, and walked away completely. He was completely humiliated, and so were all of his followers. So the great reversal, the main reasons for retreat from society, when you look at that, main reasons, embarrassment at the Scopes trial. It's not that the Bible can't stand on its own, but when you get a gentleman up there that isn't, for one thing, isn't a theologian, and another doesn't really have any expertise on evolution, and he's going to try to defend creation against a well-versed evolutionist, need to have the humility to acknowledge that you might be outgunned. The Bible's not outgunned, but this William Jennings Bryan had no idea really what he was doing. That's not just the commentary of others, that's my own commentary on this from reading the transcripts. I would be embarrassed if this man was my representative on an issue like that. So embarrassment at the Scopes trial. Secondly, there was a realization that mainstream America isn't really so Christian as we thought. There's a diversity of people, diversity of religions, diversity of morals, diversity of viewpoints and philosophies. There was a sudden despair amongst fundamentalists that all our efforts to save America failed. The anti-evolution campaign was a spectacular failure. Anti-Catholic, spectacular failure. Anti-alcohol campaign, though in the 20s, we were still a dry country, so to speak, it became increasingly apparent that there's fewer and fewer and fewer allies in this anti-alcohol campaign. And then fourthly, this great reversal, it was just for fundamentalists unclear, well, what do we do now? What now? Carl Henry in 1940, in his book, The Uneasy Conscience of Fundamentalism, says, "No voice is speaking today as Paul would, either at the UN sessions or at labor management disputes or in strategic university classrooms, whether in Japan or Germany or America." And it's just, Henry's just making this assessment that fundamentalists had become silent, isolated themselves to such a degree that where can you find anyone boldly proclaiming God's word in the public square? You couldn't. And so you started to have this break between fundamentalists and evangelicals. Fundamentalist evangelical was, the terms were synonymous, 1915 to 1940, we'll say. But they started to become separate around the time of World War II, because as you looked at the landscape of the entire world, the world is suffering. 70 million men died in World War II. Doesn't God's word have anything to offer to a hurting world? You know, I can identify with that question. We should not be so isolated that we're just kind of a movement all to ourselves and we're just going to exist behind four walls of our church and be okay. Doesn't God's word have anything to offer your neighbor next door? Doesn't God's word have anything to offer the world as a whole? Well, men like Carl F. H. Henry and said, yes, it does. And if you look on at your slides, you can see kind of a breakdown. If you're having trouble following some of these terms, evangelicalism, 1850 to 1910, you have liberals and conservatives. 1910 to 1940, the conservative branch was evangelical fundamental, evangelicals or evangelical fundamentalists. It was all kind of synonymous. But between 1940 to 1970, you have the new evangelicals and kind of your old school fundamentalists. Separation and really what do we do with the world was the big question that sort of divided these two. Doctrinally, they were very much the same. But many fundamentalists, such as Carl F. H. Henry or William Ockenguy, Charles Fuller, kind of looked and said, but you know, the gospel can do something with the world. We have something to offer, something of incredible value. Why don't we take the gospel? Why don't we use the gospel and tell the world what it says?